The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and say hello to shorts and tees and bikinis. And for anything I'm trying to update in my wardrobe, I'm not trying to spend a small fortune. Let me tell you about Quince, because I just found a bikini, top and bottom, $50. High quality. 25 for the top, 25 for the bottom. There is a certain Australian shearling slipper that I've been looking for, and I found it for $50 on Quince. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Lexi for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Lexi to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Lexi. Okay, I'm gonna get a little sad girl for a second. But Mother's Day is around the corner. And if your mother is still in your life, a really unique gift that you could get is My Life in a Book. How it works is that every week, mylifeinabook.com will send your mom questions via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or record her voice. And My Life in a Book compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. Oh my God, I'm gonna cry. And then they can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. So it's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Woo! If you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code Lexi at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code Lexi for 10% off today. Hello, hello, everybody. I'm Lexi Lombard, your host of the At Lexi podcast, and thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Now, if you are a fan of the podcast, you may or may not have listened to an episode called Is This Your First Time on Earth? It's one of my favorite episodes to date. Highly recommend listening if you haven't already, but the question was sparked through a conversation with one of my dearest friends. She's someone that I always go to for communication regarding heart space, and I want to go over life's underbelly. I want to talk about the questions that keep you up at night. I want to discuss the things that stress you out. What a perfect person to join me for this episode than the one who started that initial conversation, Miss Alex McQueen.
Oh, my heart. Lex, I love you. Thank you for having me. I'm already very excited. I haven't seen any of these questions or ever done a podcast, so buckle up, people.
All right, every week I ask for questions on Instagram, and this week I asked for questions exactly as I proposed. Yeah. So we're going to go through the Instagram questions.
Does shit-talking make one a bad person?
We need to define shit-talking. How would you define shit-talking?
I like that approach. My knee-jerk was, why do we have to label it a bad person?
Yeah.
And also, yeah, what is the shit-talking? I think using that trope, you know, like, we're all mirrors. It's like, you're going to see in others what you're giving yourself. That's going to reflect back onto you. So what are you shit-talking about? Are you jealous of someone? Are you seeing something in them that you fear seeing in yourself?
Or are you communicating something that startled you that you wanted to communicate with another person that knows that person?
This might be a Lexi thing where you're like, is it shit-talking or is it just speaking my truth?
In my definition, some gossip is shit-talking, but not all gossip is shit-talking.
I saw a matrix of this earlier.
Like a Venn diagram?
Yeah, it was like quadrants where it was like how to define like gossip, shit-talking, catharsis, whatever. Where
that venting.
Falls. Yeah, venting.
Shit-talking, I think, is when you've gone too far.
I think
to the point where you're actually not, it's no longer productive.
That's a good way to phrase. Is it shit-talking? What's your goal here? What are you doing?
Because if I'm venting, if I need catharsis, if I also just heard something juicy, let me do it. But if I'm clearly coming from a point of jealousy, like being a hater for no reason, then I would consider it shit-talking. But
what makes it juicy? Like, what's entertaining about that? That Eleanor Roosevelt quote that's like, great ideas discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, small minds discuss people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what are we doing here?
Okay, you know? We'll use the example of seeing Bad Bunny over the weekend reading a blank book at the club.
What?
Yeah, I could talk mad shit on that.
Why?
You know he wasn't reading because he felt like reading. He wanted to make a scene. He wanted people to see him reading.
Oh, I didn't even see him.
You didn't see him?
No. Oh. I was with Evan, the bartender.
See, I was at the other end.
But how do you know what that's what he wants? Now we're just guessing.
See, this is my point. Now we're shit talking.
Ah.
If I wanted to talk to you after our night out, and I wanted to discuss, Bad Bunny had either a book or, rumor has it was just a blank book, and he was pretending to read it while standing up to the music. This is not someone that we have teeth in the game for. You don't care about Bad Bunny any more than I do. We also
don't know who he was. Just, he makes music, right?
He makes music.
Okay, so here's what I'm saying is maybe he wanted to be like, I'm a man of many trades, you know? I'm not making the music tonight. I'm just enjoying myself with, you know, it's like he's a live art piece. You know?
That's benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of that, but here's the thing, is we're associating positive and negative attributes.
I think he was acting a little bit like a pick me. I think he wanted to say, oh yeah, I'm a big celebrity and look at me at the club reading. It's a teeny tiny club that you can't even hear your friend talking. I know you're not paying attention to a book.
Do you know?
Me talking about Bad Bunny to you and the listeners right now. Does shit talking make me a bad person?
No, I don't think it makes you a bad person. I don't think there's any, like, is this scale. I think it's just me and my Aquarian judgment. I'm like, if you want to be stupid on your own time, you can.
like, don't come talking to me about it, but, like, do I think you're bad for doing this? No.
I think that if you're only seeing negativity in others and only making assumptions in the sense of, like, he just wanted this, it's not that you're a bad person, but it's going to be very revealing into
your current psyche.
Where you're at with yourself.
Is it potentially a bad habit? Sure. In small doses, sure, it's not going to be harmful. But if that's where you're spending a majority of your energy, consider that.
I mean, if you're stirring things up, like within the comfort of your home, if you want to spend all your time speaking about other people and your, you know, thoughts on what precipitates their actions, go for it. But it just feels like an inefficient way to use your mind.
Point blank.
Where attention flows, energy grows. Where I'm walking through the world and I'm going to see things and make judgments and think negative things about them, that's the lens through which I'm going to see the rest of my life. Whereas perhaps you could look at Bad Bunny in the club reading and say, you know what, maybe he's like, I'm going to rebrand as Pleasant Rabbit and I want to be a reader man.
Pleasant Rabbit 2024. My favorite artist is Pleasant Rabbit. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll say he was getting paid for this appearance and thought, I am neck deep in this book and I can't let it go. I can't put it down. I'm bringing it to the club.
He has a girlfriend who is somewhere not nearby and she's like, why are you going to this club with all these girls? And he's like, watch, I'm going to do a PR stunt. I'm going to be in the corner reading. I didn't lie, babe. I am. I'm reading a book.
You know what? He left alone.
I hope that answered that. You got two ADD chicks with double Celsius.
Yeah. This one was DM'd to me because it was too long to make it in the question box.
You know that's the one I want.
Absolutely. So maybe we check through the DMs as well. So I remember this girl saying, I've only experienced minimal traumas in my life. And it keeps me up wondering, when is the big T trauma going to happen?
Okay. A lot to work with there.
Yeah. She's living in fear.
Knee jerk. Who's to say you've only experienced minimal traumas? I think everything is so subjective. The waiting for the other shoe to drop kind of feels like a trauma response. So what were those minimal traumas? One, who's to say, why does it have to be a big one? What is it? What would make you satiated? You know, like, we're in America. This girl Instagram DM'd you. She's got a phone. Like, are we going to compare ourselves to a third world country? Is that going to be sufficient trauma? You know what I mean? Like, and also, is it because she's looking at it through the lens that trauma is going to carve out the depth that allows you to have the low lows that enable the high highs? The more you've gone through the why, you know, X, Y, Z, is that what it is? And she's...
And what, the wisdom to connect and yeah. The empathy that comes along with hardship?
But it feels like this is kind of like in from an anxious place of like...
Which she did give the caveat, this might be anxiety, but...
In my head, it seems almost like she may be surrounded by people who have gone through textbook or otherwise what she's associated, you know, more merited traumas or like heavier things. And she's like, well, I haven't had that yet. So like, when's that going to happen to me? I'm just preemptive, like... I will reject you so you can't push me away.
Absolutely.
She's like, I know that a hard trauma is coming and therefore when it does, I'm going to be...
Yeah. And I'm expecting it. Yeah. And when it happens, I'll think exactly because I've been preparing for it.
Yeah. It's like, you can't hurt me. I'm telling myself I'm going to get hurt. The noteworthy thing there is just the first sentence of like, I've only experienced minimal traumas. I think that's just an inherently flawed logic. I think there's definitely strength in acknowledging areas where you've been blessed. I think gratitude, if you could sit in gratitude and have that be the way you approach the world, 100% yes. I think instead of saying, I've only experienced minimal traumas, perhaps say something to the effect of like, I am particularly blessed and I see that I have so much XYZ abundance and I'm wondering, is this too good to be true? Which almost feels like a self-worth thing. Something that still to this day sticks with me. When I was in grad school, those boys I nannied for,
mm-hmm.
one of them had leukemia, 5 years old. This woman, super mom of the world, I nannied for her and worked under her in a professional capacity. So I saw both sides. You would never know. I mean, it's 5 a.m. and she's like making keto blueberry pancakes. And at 7, she's like running meetings as the director. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I remember this girl came in sobbing about this cheer thing. And the director was so empathetic with her, like so empathetic. And when she left, I'm like, for sake of not sounding judgmental, how do you do that? How do you sit there and earnestly empathize with this girl sitting thinking like, and I know all of her, not even all of her, I know a modicum of what's going on in her life. I'm sitting there like, girl, who cares about this otherwise ridiculous thing? Like, do you realize? And she was like, Alex, in her world, this is the big deal. This is the thing. I can't project my threshold and what I have going on onto her. That's not fair, you know? And I think that it's kind of like that. You only have minimal traumas. Well, maybe that's what you need. Like, why do you need more, right? What would that do for you to have the more trauma? Would it give you security that it finally came? Maybe just reframing from a place of gratitude. I'm super blessed, and that's okay. Think back on anything negative that's happened in your life. Well, you're a tough one. Sorry. With Sandy in regards to that. That's one I can't speak on. Other than that, anything that, like, surface level, you're like, that was a bad thing. That was a bad thing that happened to me. I didn't, you know, at the time, felt like the end of the world. Not getting into the college you want. Getting cut from a soccer team. You know, like, needing to move across the country at the drop of a hat. Being cheated on. At the time, you're not grateful for it. It feels like something wrong happened. In the future, you're going to look back and think, I'm so grateful that happened, right? You know that. And I think once you go through the vicissitudes of life enough, you realize I'm always going to have that gratitude that the cards fell that way. Not in a men plan, God laughs kind of way, but in like a, the universe really is always operating for my highest good. And my inability to see that is the only thing in my way of feeling that gratitude. So if I know in 5 years, I'm going to be grateful in a year, in 10 years, in X amount of time in my life, if I'm going to be happy that this seemingly bad thing happened, why not just, like, embrace that in the moment? Like, that is the operating place. Even now, when stuff happens, it's like, you know, that's great poetry fodder. Or, like, someone smashes my car back windshield. I'm like, I wonder why I'll be grateful for this. Like, it makes life more fun. It's like, phone got stolen. I'm like, I wonder what gift this is. And it always, always ends up being something positive. And it just makes life better to, in the moment, be like, all right, cheeky, you cheeky broad, like, what are we doing for me right now? Because it's not, the math's not mathing yet, but I believe there are some missing parts of the equation, okay? Do you think finding a purpose in life is necessary to live a fulfilled life?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do think. To explore, to love, as long as I do that, I think I'll be fulfilled and happy.
I was going to say to love. I feel like there's a lot of pressure, particularly now that we have such easily accessible knowledge at our fingertips, literally. There's a lot of pressure to, like, find your purpose, you know, like, is it this, is it that, whatever.
Is it starting a foundation? Is it helping the youth?
We all feel called for this grand purpose. I think if you are living in your integrity and you're coming from a place of love, that's the way through which we should walk through life, right? Where it gets tricky is, and I've even seen this before in myself, where when trying to navigate that, we associate human metrics as opposed to just trusting in that. So, like, is it all love? Yes. In my head, I'm like, Alex, you know, you've got this gift. You know, like, what you need to write a book. You need to blah, blah, blah. My mom, for example, I don't know a more spiritual creature, frankly. And she, for a long time, was like, I felt like I needed to yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, Mom, look at what you're doing with these kids, you know? Like, that's your book. That impact that you're having, that's the purpose. It doesn't, I think it all pours into the same pot, you know? Like, we're the ones who hear it's not from an ego place per se, but it's what we used to worship the sun. Like, we're trying to attribute what we know to it. Should I have a TED Talk? You know, should that be? It's like, it doesn't matter. If it's a TED Talk or the man at the grocery store whose day you made a little bit better, that's the same output. And the scale with which you do that, like the fulfillment you have there, I think the trusting in it, as opposed to you associating how well you're doing with your purpose, is like navigating that's difficult. So I think, can you have a fulfilled life without knowing your purpose? Like, it's kind of a daunting way to look at it. I think it's a lot less like, what metrics are we using to define your purpose? And if your purpose you can acknowledge is to be here and exist and do your best, babe, you're doing it.
Someone asked, to what extent is having good intentions important? Do intentions overrule actions?
Like, to what extent is having good intentions important? Very. I think your come from is what's going to guide you through life. I think.
But if your actions are never following your intentions, I don't think intentions end up mattering.
I see what you're saying.
Dad wants to go to the soccer game. He always says he wants to go to the soccer game. He's never made it to a soccer game. He wants to, but.
That's a desire, though, not an intention. Dad is intending to go to the board meeting. He's not at the soccer game. If he earnestly had the intention to go to the game, he'd be at the game. Eventually, right? Your desires, your intentions, that can have a difference, you know?
You think desires are different than intentions?
Yeah, 100%.
Do you think desires first, intention second, action is third?
I don't picture it as like a 1, 2, 3 kind of thing.
A desire, intention, and action. I'm seeing it linear.
My desire is to have cookies every day for breakfast. My intention is to nourish my body.
Is to have an egg.
In a way that enables it to do what I wanted to do. My actions.
Is that I had a cookie after.
My actions are that I'm on a megaphone rating a cookie. I think you can have a difference between your desire and your intention. And that difference is what we're all navigating, right? That leads to our actions. If the father intended to go to the soccer game, eventually he will be at that soccer game. How much do intentions matter? They matter a lot. I think, and I'm talking like your relationship with yourself, not what you communicate to the world or others or your inner circle, what you truly, you to you, intend. I think that matters a lot because it's going to be where your thoughts go and
eventually how it will lead manifests. To the actions.
Yeah, I think that's indisputable. Says me, no doctorate.
Someone said, will death be painful?
Or is it speaking afterlife? We're just talking.
Will death be painful? Yeah, dying can be painful, but I don't think the transition into the afterlife is painful. I think that's a pleasant one. Once the earthly experience ends, I think it's pleasant.
Even as it ends, when you read about NDEs or anything like that. And
there's a warmth, there's a light, there's often a guardian.
It's like a coming home, the things you see. I think that it's an ascension, and what you feel is this sense of like knowingness and peace that supersedes any of the fear we have.
Layla wants to know, what makes humans superior or different from animals? Parentheses, art, love, etc.
Who said that we're superior?
I don't think we're superior. You know what pisses me off? One of my favorite icebreaker questions is, would you rather speak every language in the world or the ability to communicate with any animal? The quickness in
my
which
philosophical ass, people, if you could speak every language, Lexi, you could speak to animals.
Totally. But we'll say you can speak to every human versus all animals.
There's a wrench. You know I'm throwing it.
Absolutely. And I'm saying, I'm going to catch it, put it in my lap, and we'll save it for later.
Everyone says humans.
Not everybody. Yeah. I said animals. I think all the caveats aside, my issue is the quickness in which some people completely disregard the value of speaking to an animal, the value of animals in general. I've had, I don't even know the right adjective, selfish of you, how small-minded of you to assume that humans are the only people with
value. We've got some turtles that have been around longer than any animal, and they've seen some shit.
Yeah, we have. Trees weren't a part of it, but I was going to add them to mix.
Fair.
You know?
Any living organism, that could be cool. God, if I could talk to a tree, we'd be picking trees.
You'd know.
Oh, my gosh, like a Bodhi tree out here?
Let's go to the redwoods. But the speed in which people completely disregard the value of animals is astonishing to me.
I think there's value to both.
You think that there's only value in humans? Of course I think there's value in humans, but how dare you assume that humans are the only living being with value?
No, I don't think so. But
yeah, I'm saying I thought that would have been a harder question to answer, and when I throw that one out there, without them even entertaining the concept of the animals.
Like, where are you asking?
New York, LA, Virginia. I ask it all the time on vacation.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Often men, too. women are always, if I had to pick, it seems like women are the first to say, oh, I think I'd be interested in speaking to the animals. Men are always like, language.
A more pragmatic approach. That makes sense. Humans.
Why animals. Do you think some people think that humans are superior to animals?
I don't care. It requires the acknowledgement of the interconnectedness on like a more spiritual scale that I think some people don't subscribe to. Like if you think that we're on here in a meat, not in a meat suit, living our life and then we're buried in the ground, then you're going to look at, you know, an ant and see an ant. You're going to look at a turtle and see a turtle. And obviously a turtle can't make a skyscraper or run for president. So of course I'm going to be like, humans are better. Music, art. Like I haven't seen the album come from the dolphins. But if you're acknowledging the interconnectedness, the tree, you know, the wind, then yeah, that's going to be a consideration in your answer.
Not a question, but the entirety of man-made religion baffles me. It all stems from something. Also, when are we going to go back to having our own personalities, interests, looks, etc.? Okay, one more. Imagine if the smartphone or digital camera was never invented.
That's a lot to unpack.
That's man-made religion. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't baffle me.
No. Oh.
Man searching for meaning.
We're still
tale
doing
as old
that.
As time.
You think in XYZ amount of years, we're not going to look back and be like, yo, they thought, fill in blank, like, we still do that.
Yes, it all stems from something, but I'm not baffled by that solution of giving yourself a sense of ease, feeling that there's faith to be had.
It nods to that awareness that no matter how deep it is within all of us, you know?
I don't know if I care about answering the question, when are we going to go back to having our own personalities, looks, etc. Just the homogenous of society, but I also think that's always kind of existed. Like, there are people that subscribe more to following than leading, and they would rather feel included than be to their own drum.
Yeah. Or beat to your own drum, girl.
And then one more. Imagine if the smartphone or digital camera was never invented.
That is interesting. I was reading something that before there were mirrors.
Oh. So we only did our hair looking in the river.
What?
But no digital cameras, no smartphones. I was thinking about this yesterday, back even 30, 40 years ago. Some people chose a life to be on camera. They wanted to model. They wanted to be an actor. Now everyone's growing up with videos of themselves. Like, yeah. I can't think of a single person, even just the rogue finance guys or people that are behind the scenes desk jobs, have at least one or two TikToks dancing to a sound. You made a video as soon as we got into the studio. You're like, look where we are today.
True.
There were people that went through their whole life without ever having content created at home, where it's being posted for a community to see.
I think it's something that I've seen more, like how we used to have lighters at concerts, and now it's like you have your phone video. Mm-hmm. I think something that, the one thing about that makes me a little bummed is when something happens now, a kid takes his first steps. Like, I remember, I forget what it was, but I was walking somewhere in public and something happened and everybody's knee jerk was to, like, grab their phone, start recording.
And it's good, bad, ugly, everything.
And that's the thing. It's like, I mean, I'm part of it. And it does make me wonder to what degree that can subtract from our connection with each other and with experiences. It's like, don't get me wrong, I'm going to take a photo of a really beautiful meal. Does that detract for me from, like, how great it tastes? No. But I do see where that gets tricky when you're, like, every single time someone goes out to eat, they have to take a photo and do something. Like, does it, if you're on a first date, imagine if that happened, how weird that would be, right? But is that normalized for Gen Z?
Probably. I'm not sure. But then because it's not normal on a first date, there is then a sense of knowing how tacky it actually is. If we're not willing to show that we use the camera until we get closer with someone, is interesting in itself, where, like, oh, I don't use my phone. Like, I'm giving you my attention. But then once you break a barrier, suddenly your phone gets to be in the relationship.
Yeah. So it's like, to a certain degree, we're aware of the fact that perhaps it does.
And kids knowing, okay, I'm talking to mommy, but now I'm talking to mommy on the camera.
That's sad.
Is it?
Yeah, the kid thing, I've been doing a lot of reading on this ever, because
it's just something that we've never seen before. And it feels so strange that now a camera is a member of the community.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a hard pill to swallow. Because digital camera, I can see people existing with just the camera before a smartphone and thinking, oh my gosh, now we have documentation. But now we have documentation all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, it's like a person in the friend group. There is friend time with phone, without phone. Like when phone gets to be a part of the night.
Mm-hmm. And the expectations that we've all had to navigate, particularly being millennials or anybody who's younger, like in our age demographic, I think we've had to kind of pave the way on new societal norms. Example, I had a conversation with a friend. I posted an Instagram story and didn't text her back. This is like way back when. She's like, I know you're on your phone, you know? And my contention is, I'm like, I'm enjoying time with family. Like, I reposted a story. That doesn't mean that I have to write you back just because I have my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But I see where that's a conundrum, where it's like, wait a second. Like, there's an assumption that if you have the availability, that you're going to be responding.
Does not mean I can be reached at all times.
Yeah, and I think that's a weird thing that in the teens, at least for me at this time, to have to think about that, right? Like before, it's like you call a house phone, they don't pick up, that's fine. Maybe they're eating dinner.
Yeah.
Now it's like, I know you have your phone on you at all times. Why aren't you picking up?
I know your phone's at the table.
Right?
I know your phone's in your bed.
Like, we have to...
You're on a walk, I know your phone's in your pocket. It's you can always reach me, but maybe I don't want to be reached, but because I have this device with me, now I have an obligation.
Mm.
And it's been for a long time under the pretense or defense of safety. Like, I want to go on a long drive without my phone. Okay, well, what if something happens?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's like, well, what if something doesn't?
Yeah.
I remember I was doing a lot of Depop orders years ago, and the walk to the post office was maybe like 10, 15 minutes. So I would leave my phone at home and have 20, 30 minutes to myself, and it felt like I entered a secret garden.
Isn't it insane?
Being able to exist in the world, like, oh, if you call, sorry. I'll call you back. Oh, you texted me? Sorry. It felt so special, and it makes me miss a life that I didn't get to lead. But I really could discuss the concept of the smartphone existing in our day-to-day life for hours, because I have a ton of questions, I have some merited concerns, and then I have some wishes for developing particular boundaries, and I don't want to be like a super phone mom, be taking photos of my kid doing everything ever, but when they're super cute, don't you want to?
Listen, it's real easy to posture it on the tip of parent I'd be without having a child. Like, I've got a couple of snake plants right now, and I'm like, my kid will never use a screen. Like, we'll see how. But it's unprecedented, you know what I mean?
This entire existence is unprecedented. Or simultaneously been here all before.
Next question.
I could talk about it forever. All right.
We can.
Oh, Anonymous wants to know, how do you deal with not having the life you wanted to or could have had?
Wanted to have or could have had?
There was a slash.
It's kind of like, oh.
We can answer both.
It's like grass is greener, right?
Sure. Or disappointment, like, within you, like, your decisions.
Fulfilling your life's potential or something? Mm-hmm. Like,
I was interpreting it as if I had said yes to a few more things. Like, why am I...
My take on this is kind of annoying, because I'm like, I really do feel like you are where you're supposed to be. You're doing what you need to do. It might not make sense to you, but, like, the fulfillment in life is going to be where you place your frame. So, like, what I could have had, sure, maybe you could have had whatever this thing is that you desired, but, like...
You weren't meant to.
Or, like, you're alive. Go do it. Like, I'm not, I obviously...
That was what I was thinking. Having this question to yourself maybe is your signal to start making the turnaround.
I get it, though, if you're like, you know, it's probably too late to become a professional soccer player if you're 45 asking this question. Sure. What are the things that are leading you to think that's what you wanted? You know, maybe honing in on what it is that you, what about those things make you want them? And I guarantee there's always going to be another way to get those things.
I agree.
Maybe not a World Cup, but you know what I mean.
Ooh, this person wants to know, am I wasting time being in love, quite honestly, with the wrong person?
No. I was aware of the fact that I was engaging in a relationship with someone who was not my person, is not my person.
You loved them.
Loved them.
Still love them.
Still love them, different capacity. But yeah, at that time, like...
someone you had already been in a relationship with that you sort of let them back into your life, knowing they weren't your person.
Yeah. And it was difficult for me because it felt heart, mind, all of the things, it felt right. And I was at the same time aware, you're not my person, you know? And that within me, who like lauds themselves on self-awareness and doing, you know, what feels right, I'm at this fork in the road of like, how, knowing, again, where attention flows, energy grows, if I'm investing in you, if I'm saying yes to you, person, then I'm inherently saying no
to everybody else,
to my actual person, right? And that was the lens through which I was viewing that situation. And I was struggling with that. And where I landed, what that kind of taught me was throughout that experience in engaging with that person again, at no point was I like, this feels wrong. I know that he's not my person, but it feels wrong. It felt right the whole time. It was ticking the boxes. It was doing what I wanted to do. It felt good to my heart, to my mind, to everything. And I think sometimes where we make mistakes is thinking that we have the full picture. I think my general mantra is, so long as you're operating within your integrity and you're from a place of love, like, there are no wrong answers, really. So it's like, it's not that saying yes to him was saying no to my person. Perhaps that was the stepping stone. It's always saying yes to my person, going through that experience with him, saying yes to that, honoring myself, even when it didn't make sense. That is what put me on the trajectory to finding my person.
Oh, woman of faith. Oh,
but right? Like, why would I, because of what I think that I'm going to foresee, saying, okay, well, I know I'm not going to marry you. And so even though I want this, you want this, it feels right. It's making me happy. You know, everything is going well. But because I think that I have the full picture on a macro scale, I'm just going to say no on principle. No, it's not like I led him on. This whole time I'm sitting there like, we're not each other's person, but like, this feels right. Yeah.
Right now.
This. Yeah. Like, if you're communicating and you're being transparent, you're within your integrity. Sure. And guess what? It naturally fizzled out to a point where I was like, hey, like, I think now I've reached that point where it doesn't feel right anymore to engage in this.
What's my take on this?
You're so pro breakup.
I am so pro breakup.
If it feels like, if she's saying he's not my person, and maybe she's at that point.
Maybe breakup. She's at that point. And you can love someone and know that they're not your person.
Totally.
And as you said, it can feel right and it can feel good and you can feel happy and still know.
Context, this was like months, not years. I think if you're doing that, I think time is definitely a consideration.
Context is important.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a brief.
This was a
season.
A fleeting, like, re-breaking a bone so it heals correctly.
Okay, conspiracy theorist, put that hat on. Are you ready?
I never take it off, so.
Do you really think that famous people in Hollywood are selling their soul to the devil or the Illuminati?
We can talk about Hollywood. In general, my approach, I'll zoom out of Hollywood. Hollywood, government, health, whatever we want to call it.
Industry.
In all of the things.
Capitalism.
All of the big things. I think that to operate under the assumption that the entities that are, you know,
controlling
or at play here are divulging 100% of the information 100% of the time is a very foolish notion. It's very naive. We know that. I think it's healthy to operate with a certain degree of not skepticism per se, but just awareness of that.
How right? Dark do you think it gets?
Dark.
I don't think
that a lot of it's not really conspiracy theory. I'm like, read MKUltra, like,
yeah.
Operation Anything. Like, they can unrelease
Alex
this.
Does read Operation Anything.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's out there.
Like, for a long time, MKUltra was a conspiracy theory. And then they're like, oh, Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. Oh, he was part of that?
Mm.
Oh, they left that little detail out. Like,
little whistleblowers. You know. We have Snowdens, so.
All that stuff. I think, you know, for me, it's like.
Do you think there's devil worship going on in Hollywood?
There's probably devil worship going on down the street. To me, it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, that's not where I choose to allocate bandwidth. When you have a military complex that benefits from war, a healthcare industry that benefits from sickness, you know, XYZ, throw that on anything, like, there's going to be inherent corruption. That's a thing, right? When you boil it down, the fact that there's, like, a handful or less of families and businesses that are controlling everything it does not behoove their operation to let the masses in on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a facade that trickles down of like, oh, is it left or right? Is it black or this? Is it da-da-da? No, like it's a lot of distractions to, yeah.
It's not black or white. It's red, and it's behind you, not left or right.
I think it's a lot easier to be controlled if you just sit at your school desk and answer the question that you were asked instead of the one that they're distracting you from, right? It's like, I don't even want to, like, teeter in that game. Like, duh.
Yeah.
Ooh, does everyone have a soulmate?
I circled that one. I liked that one.
I like that one. What do you think?
I think everyone has soulmates. I think there's S's.
Keep going.
Oh, I think there's romantic soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
S on that one. And then I define soulmate as someone that I've known in another lifetime, that I meet and this is not our first time. We have no reason to know each other. Earthly, we have no reason to know each other. We have no mutual friends. We've met. I would also be willing to believe that maybe there's someone that I haven't met before that I'm meant to meet on this life as well. But I do heavily believe in soulmates, and I believe there's a ton of them. You?
That, like, Anamkara, soul friend thing.
What's Anamkara?
It just means soul friend. Soul clusters, I think, can exist. I think there can be groups of souls. I think soulmate. I think, does everyone have one soulmate?
No.
That, to me, feels a bit limited. You're onto something there, and you can find your soulmate, for sure. But I think, is there one person, one soul? No, I think you can have soul contracts with people. I think that you can serve out those purposes in one or many lifetimes. I think you can have, you know, a soul that you cross paths with.
Can I interject?
Yeah.
Because I want to take a quick tangent.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be quick. I want to take...
Take a tangent.
I want to take a tangent. Soul contracts. Would you like to define a soul contract for our listeners?
Oh, God. Like, no. Here's a note from our special guest, Joe Dispenza.
I just started listening to his book this morning.
Oh, nice. In context of life's journey, like, to love, for me, feels like allowing or helping foster others seeing that divinity within them. And I think your soul is on this journey, right? In this lifetime, in every lifetime. On a human level and on a soul level, I think that there are certain people in your life that for sure you've known in other lifetimes or, you know, will know in future lifetimes. I think that's all. Clusters, contracts, friends. Like, sometimes maybe there's not a contract. I've recently broached.
What's a soul cluster? Your family?
Yeah. I mean, I think my
family. Your specific family. Yeah. I don't mean everyone's
family. Not always,
family.
No. But, yeah, no, I do.
That's crazy. I also do.
Yeah, no, I know.
There's not a doubt in my mind that all of your family has known each other before. It's actually crazy. Alex has one of the most unique experiences of, dare I say, anyone I've ever met in my life.
I think there were no accidents made there. I recently started toying with the idea that it doesn't need to be a soulmate or a soul contract or a soul whatever. Sometimes I think your soul just, like, knows someone. You know? Like, we've just done this dance before and we're friends. That's kind of like the Anamkara where it's like, oh.
Yeah, like our souls are friends.
Yeah.
Our souls are mates.
Yeah, like, you teeter on soulmate there, and I'm like, well, but you know what I mean.
In my definition, that would be a soulmate. Someone that I've met before would be a friend of my soul.
Yes, same thing.
So I guess, I didn't know where the disagreement was coming.
In my head, soulmate had, like, an inherently romantic undertone, so I didn't want to get confused.
No. I think soulmates can be romantic, and I think it'd be sweet.
So if you define the word mate...
I was like, hang on now. I don't understand why you're shaking your head at me. I think we're agreeing.
Story of our pre-caffeinated life.
Story of our post-caffeinated life. Alex and I will disagree all the time to find out that we're agreeing. Our biggest fights have always been us agreeing.
They're the best. Wait, why is that so true?
Every disagreement we've ever been in has been us
has
agreeing.
Been an agreement.
I think that's
kind of a gift.
But I would also, yes, kind of a gift. I mean, that's beautiful that our biggest arguments have been...
You, no. No, I don't think it's a gift. I think it's a gift.
Damn, I really was going to say no and say the same thing. Maybe we should use the improv language, yes and. Yes, comma, and. Because you and I love words.
Yeah, I love them.
We get stuck on them.
That's true. I've worked on that. I love words.
So if our languages aren't the same, we will...
If there's any degree of subjectivity in our understanding of it, mate, for example.
Absolutely.
We, like, since they are so intentional in the way we use them, I'm like, but you said mate, and that has a romantic undertone. And you're like, mate means friend.
And then we find out we're agreeing.
Yeah. No, I hear that.
Absolutely. What was the original question? I want you to talk about soul contracts. That's a personal question I have for you.
Fuck yeah.
Because I think you were the first one that introduced me to that concept.
Hold.
Please hold. Oh my god, you know what this would be great for? This is a great time for a word from today's sponsors.
Let's talk wellness, ladies. I know some of you love yourself. A new wellness brand, something to hop on, and let me tell you about Fleur Marché. They deliver simple, quality, and affordable wellness solutions. Founded by women and inspired by the female dreamers, hustlers, and activists on the front lines of change, their mission is to help you feel 100% every single day with fun and easy to understand plant-powered wellness products. Their plant-based wellness patches deliver ingredients topically. These ingredients are then absorbed into the skin and into the bloodstream. You just stick it right on your skin. They're vegan, cruelty-free, latex-free, tested for pesticides, herbicides, and other contaminants before and after production. Find your new wellness essentials at fleurmarché.com and get a special discount just for the At Lexi listeners. Get 20% off your first order site-wide with promo code Lexi at checkout. Orders over $50 get free shipping. Go to fleurmarché.com and use code Lexi for 20% off your first order.
None of you are going to be stepping on my open toes this festival and concert season because I will be in boots. And if you need boots, go to Tecovas. They have first wear comfort. So this means little to no break-in period. So if you're listening to this in April and think, oh my gosh, Coachella is right around the corner, I need these boots now, but oh my gosh, breaking in boots is such a pain. No. These boots have little to no break-in period, and they're also such high quality. It's really hard to find high quality boots paired with this level of comfort. They have timeless styles. They're always going to be on trend. And if you can get into a store, Tecovas believes in Western for all, so you can feel that when you go in, you're going to be greeted like family, offered a boot shine and a drink, the hard stuff even if you prefer, and you can get custom fitted for a new pair of boots. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's tecovas.com. They do offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. And we're back.
This is the first Google hit when I put soul contract.
Do you align with it?
I'm real time.
Live time.
I'll react in real time. Soul contract is a relationship between souls decided upon before birth. In many belief systems, it is thought that your soul moves through many lives as it tries to reach its highest potential.
I'm on board with that.
So far, so great. The guiding lessons of your life are determined before birth in something called a soul contract. That whole, like, Akashic record predetermined thing is interesting to toy with because I think it deprives a certain degree of free will. You know? Like, I don't really like the idea that no matter what, you know, like, it is written. But I also do kind of like the idea of, like, there's something there at play.
A predetermined destiny.
In that trust in the universe of, like, it is written, but it's because I'm writing it.
Oh, that one's a hard one to conceptualize because it's so easy to want to believe and disagree with at the same time.
Pre-birth agreement between two souls. So, yeah. In future incarnation, how they'll help each other, teach each other some lessons. Example. This one gets gnarly. What led to this combo when I was, a middle schooler and randomly told my mom I had a conversation with God. And I was like, yeah, Mom. That is why Kate, Aaron, and Neely and I, like, we are all here to teach you a certain lesson in this lifetime because it's your last incarnation. She's like, oh, what the? And now that I have, you know, like, more tools in the toolkit, the vernacular I'm getting at is, like, you birthed your soul contracts. Like, this was no accident and thus a soul cluster.
A friend of mine went to see someone of more psychic abilities and was telling her that her parents and her have been parents and children.
Kate, mom, switching.
Many times. This is the first lifetime that she is the child, though.
Oh.
She's like, this is not your first or second time around with your parents, but this is your first lifetime where you're the child.
They say Kate and my mom flip-flop.
Wow.
And that's why Scarlet is so profound, just because this is like, it's like closing Kate something out.
Kate is Alex's sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex is one of four. Four girls. Four gorgeous, brilliant girls.
She wanted boys.
She said, I want boys, and God said, oh, here's a girl. Try again. Another girl. Third time? Girl. Fourth?
Great. Also girl.
Okay. Four it is.
Definition of insanity.
How did your sister's husband know that he was about to have a soul contract with a baby?
Kate said that. I don't know if he does.
Oh. Yeah. Like how does Kate know?
How does anyone know?
How does anyone know?
I feel like also very fortunate to be in a Tapped In crew. All of the kudos. Anybody who grew up, like, not under Sheila Tequila and has any modicum of spirituality in their bones, I so commend you for that, because
Alex grew up in a vastly...
I'm very fortunate that there were no...
mystical space where a lot of the non-physical was welcomed.
It was just... there was no limited thinking. Like, it was just very... all of the doors were open, I think.
It's beautiful.
The general approach was great.
And it was agreed upon by all.
Yeah, like there was
the sisters, the mom, everyone's on board.
Yeah.
So like, special.
What if someone steals the car with the keys in it? Well, they need it more. Like, there's just no, like, it's almost kind of like now this whole thing about it being like the Matrix, or like we're in a simulation. Like, my mom treated life like Monopoly from day one, so it kind of took away a lot of those fear-based barriers. Like, even to date, and you've seen the vicissitudes of affluence, you're like, money comes, money goes. Health comes, health goes. You know, like, it's like, that's not what we're doing here. Like, don't get lost in the human sauce. Like, mm-hmm. we're, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
Gratitude for that.
Gratitude for everything. Even the hard stuff. That being said, death is one of those ones that I'm like, I wrestle with that because I haven't experienced an immediate family member, and I would approach that with much.
Yeah, the gratitude or the everything happens for a reason is just inappropriate to say to someone grieving.
Yeah.
Not to say it isn't necessarily true.
Yeah.
It's not your place to tell them that.
Yeah.
It's their place to decide whether it is or whether it's not on their own, because that is the only definitive exit that we have witness of here on Earth for a person being or not being.
Like you said, it's inappropriate to tell anyone that.
I'm grateful to have had my mom at all.
That's your, like, you're, yeah. You, I know.
Also, my mom's in the room with us right now. She dressed me this morning.
Ugh, Sandy.
I swear to God.
She did.
My mom had 150 plus sweaters. Oh. That was her closet. She had other things, but it was mostly just a bedroom of sweaters. And I'm in, like, little socks with Mary Janes and a pair of denim. I just am dressed like my mom right now, and I'm channeling her.
Mm. She's always with you. You look like a little strawberry right now.
I look like a little strawberry. Oh, my God. I look like a little cherry. And my lucky outfit that my mom got me was an outfit of cherries.
Cherry hoops. What have you never touched on the podcast that you want to touch on? Like, what's something that you're like, fuck, I wish I could talk about that?
Soul contracts was huge.
Okay.
Also, familial discussion of spirituality is something that I've always lacked, and I admire and am inspired by your family and you being able to be so concretely brilliant on earthly things, as well as being book smart, street smart, and mystically smart.
I love you.
Everything about your experience is...
I love you.
You are something I've never touched on the podcast. That's why you're here.
I love you so much.
I mean this with my whole chest. Oh, Alex, I have a question for you.
What's up?
Is this your first time on Earth?
Oh, God. I'll speak to my mom's. I think my mom's soul came back to this Earth. And she was here. She is, like, in but not of this world.
Like, you've always described your mom that way.
She is not here. She's never been here.
This is something you've told me even... as children.
Because I knew it.
Yeah.
You can see it. It's just like there's not... You just know she's on a different plane. And so it's cool to be around that and be able to see that. And be like, your soul chose to come back here to show us and to mirror to all of us.
We need her on the podcast.
We really do.
Would she ever do it?
Hell yeah.
Would she actually?
Oh my God, yeah.
Guys, there's so many more questions that we could answer.
And she's so much more articulate in this.
Yeah. Because it feels like it's coming straight from the source when she speaks.
It is.
Let's bring it back to some love. Should I tell him that I'm in love with him, or does it not matter because everything comes and goes?
Who hurt you?
Bella, Bella, Bella.
Oh, man. I think I recently went through this week.
Big lesson.
Playing coy. Like, dropping the napkin, yes. Or the handkerchief, yes. But I think that there comes, like you said, with aging, I don't know, a respect for transparency. Where it's like...
if you're interested, let him know.
Yeah. I think maybe I do see it's easy to armchair quarterback being like, tell him you're in love. Because I'm like, I don't know, I would want him to tell me he's in love. Like,
of course.
I get that.
Also wanting to not play all of your cards.
Yeah. But...
But you can just play a new card game.
The second part of the question saying because everything comes and goes, that sounds like a fear of abandonment. If you're scared to tell him you love him because you're scared to lose him and you're not bothering, like, that's a protection mechanism.
But if you're not telling him, you don't have him at all. Either way, if he says no or you never tell him, you're not getting him.
Yeah, I think if this is your partner and this is your person, like, that should happen quasi-organically, right? Like, you being in love. I think inherently, love is a connection. When you are in love with someone, I think, I have thought about this in relationships where it's like, because there are ebbs and flows, always. If we're in love and I'm having, like, a down, like, I'm feeling a little bit out of love with you, that connection, it can be felt on your end. Like, you're intertwined. What's affecting one is going to be felt on the other's end. It's like, it's perceptible either way. It's like, if we're truly in love, you know what it's like to feel in love.
Yeah.
I think that if you're in love with someone who doesn't have feelings for you, that's not a genuine connection.
Yeah.
Because to be in love, in my mind, is intertwined. You are together in love.
It needs to have another person
on
board for it to be.
Like, for me, it would be tough to feel in love without the other person being in love with me, because you're doing it as a partnership, right?
So if you're interested in someone, we'll take it a step back.
Yeah.
Should you tell him?
Yeah. What do you lose by that? I mean, I get the chess game, I get the coy, I get the why men love bitches, all the things, sure. There's a consideration there. But
a new strategy that we are trying is to just be a bit more direct.
Not even more direct. I think just more, like, for a long time, I think I very much subscribe to the, like, keep your cards close to your chest, you know, for whatever reason. And it's been serving me, I guess I should say, to be less, it's like a bit more direct. Like, if I'm going on a date with someone and I'm like, hey, I really like you. I really enjoyed that. That was great. It's like, whoa, okay, I really like you too. It's affirming. It's not like I'm going to, like, make him wonder about, like, did I enjoy my... I think it just... As you get older, a lot of those things feel unnecessary, because if there's something there, it's there, and you can call a spade a spade.
I'm on board with this method right now, because if I'm interested and I let them know and I hear back that it's the same, amazing. Let's continue moving forward. If not, I will go on my merry way.
What I guess I'm getting at with the in love, like, if we, it's a microcosm of that every time I've done that so far, the fact that I've had those feelings, it's been...
Mutual?
It's not unrequited, because for me to be able to feel that way, there's obviously something else going on.
Do you think that's a you thing, or do you think that's a...
I don't know.
Yeah, because this could be a you thing. I also haven't had the experience where I've been in love with someone that is not also in love with me.
I'm saying I don't think it's possible.
Yeah. That was my question. Is it a you thing, or is this the thing?
Oh, I think that's kind of a the thing. I don't think you can...
It's hard to say.
People fall out of love, and maybe that is... There's a lag there, maybe, but I think...
Maybe there's a lag. Maybe you fall in love first. Oh, God.
I don't know about... No, I'm saying, like, I think to fall in love with someone, like, it's got to be a mutual. Like, you walk into it together. You know what I mean?
But maybe she's falling and he's fall. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if it happens at the same time, but I'm not sure.
In my head, I'm saying, for the way that I perceive falling in love, you can fall in love with the idea of someone who, like, kind of likes you, and you can fantasize about it, and you can build something up in your head, but it's a house of cards. To really have that connection. You might be in love
with a fantasy.
Yeah. I think that happens all the time, of course. But I think that to, like, really be in love... is, like, it's a bond. It's a bond that is mutual.
All right, so let's take love out of the question. Okay. Let's say I'm infatuated with someone. Should I let him know, or should I...
It's just not nearly enough context.
But... I know, it's so vague.
You know I'm a slut for context. But, yeah, I think I'm bringing it back to when things are... felt mutually, like, they kind of organically unfold. It's just also funny because the last lines of the poem that I wrote.
I need to read the poem. I
haven't. You didn't read it? Wait, really?
No.
Look at the last
read it.
Four.
Read it.
I'll read it. We can edit it out.
Okay. Alex is a poet.
This one's kind of shitty. I wrote it at 4 a.m.
She was feeling.
I was feeling. That's not, this is how I know how to feel. All right. Well, now you'll have audio of it. Maybe we cut it. But the last four lines is going to, you're going to die.
Okay.
Kind of long. You ready?
Do you want to read the last four lines or the whole thing?
I don't care. I can read the last four. Cheers to non-starters. Cards far from my chest. That's why I'm like, you didn't read it? To tumbling barstools, have a peek if you're able. To defining ironic, whether our hands folded or laid, we've both better odds for having shared the table. Play those cards far from the chest. We're better off now.
We're better off. Also, my point was that you may as well play your cards because you're wasting your time not taking a turn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone says, does any job actually benefit to the world and matter? Sometimes I'm like, why are we doing this? Such a valid question.
Good existential crisis moment.
When you're writing your to-do list, you're like, this is all quite silly.
I think those are good questions to ask. But yeah, I think, what's that story about the starfish, the man throwing them back in the sea? This man is walking and there's like all of these starfish along the beach. And he's picking one up and throwing it back in the ocean. And, you know, picks up another one, throws it in the ocean.
And they wash and it's back? Like,
no.
Oh.
It's okay.
He's picking them up. He's throwing them where they're going.
In the ocean where they belong.
Okay.
He's saving the starfish. There's like miles of coastline of these starfish. And he's, just, you know, thrown one by one. This boy comes up to him and he's like, why are you bothering picking up this starfish and throwing it in the ocean? And the guy, you know, picks it up and throws another one. He's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Like, look at how much beach there is. And the man picks up one of the starfish and he goes, it matters to this one.
I do know that story.
Yeah.
No.
It's kind of like, we're picking up starfish.
We're picking up starfish.
You know?
I don't know if it matters necessarily in your career.
I think you can be the light anywhere, in any interaction. The way that you meet the world, it doesn't matter if it's your first day of work, if you are at the grocery store, the gym, walking on the sidewalk. Like, one of the favorite games that I play with myself is when I'm, like, driving, and I'll make eye contact with someone, and I, like, smile so big, and I, like, try and make them smile back. And anytime it happens, I'm like, fuck, yes. Oh, my God.
Got him!
Hell yeah. Like, that win for the day. No, but I think in career, in whatever, like, you don't need to be fill in blank, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure this girl is thinking more in terms of when I'm answering these emails and coordinating these operations to make sure that a water bottle gets to the right influencer.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, huh? Am I saving starfish?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a lot less the actual, I think separating that human experience from the spiritual purpose is, it lends itself to a lot of peace because it's a lot less like, what am I actually doing and more, how am I doing it?
You know? I was going to ask that question next.
Like, am I going to buy almonds? Sure. Is buying almonds going to solve anything? No. But, like, that conversation that I had, taking a 5 extra seconds to, like, hug the checkout lady and ask how her son is doing, that's what I'm really here for.
Next is a question that's more just a little, like,
oh, God.
There was a bug. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, that scared me too. I didn't mean to scare you.
I got to watch your reaction, like, in real I really don't know what came up. I thought you got a notification that someone died. Woo!
No, just a little bug on my phone.
Bug on phone, spiritual meaning, Google it.
And I lost the question, but I remember it. I remember it well. The question was, how does fruit exist and colorful flowers? Yeah, there are some precious moments where it's like, oh, God just gave us little treats.
Insect symbology is often associated with change and transformation. Swarms of insects is a sign of smaller individual insects symbolize meekness and humility, highly revered traits.
I don't know if you know this about me, but did you know the bugs love me?
No accidents were... Yeah, that makes sense.
Tyra calls me the bugologist.
The bugologist?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, TNB.
I know.
I think looking up the meaning of that. Like, I'll never forget, like, my hand got stung by a bee once.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in 2020. And I remember it happened. The guy was like, I'm so sorry. Because we were going to shake hands. And a bee stung my hand. I was like, ah. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
That's also a very interesting time for it to happen. Mid-handshake?
That's the Google.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm like, all right. So I Google it. And it's like, this is a sign that, like, abundance and, like, financial prosperity, like, there's going to be an unexpected, like, windfall, whatever. And literally, I was like, wow, that's so crazy. And he's like, are you Googling why your hand got stung by a bee? And now you think that there's going to be, like, some money headed your way? Like, that is the most LA. And literally, as that was happening, I got the call from SVB.
You got the job.
And then they were like, you're hired. And I was like, Things like that all the time. I like to... when you feel called, dreams, whatever, like splinter in your foot, and you're like, you can be like, damn, I have bad luck, I have a splinter. Or you can be like, wooden foot, meaning, and you look it up, and it's like, oh, this symbol, like, I think,
like, what's this a signal to?
Why is there a bug on your hand? Change and transformation, kind of like what you're doing right now.
I don't know if I believe the Google definitions, but I
think it's whatever comes to.
Yeah. Me screaming at first because I'm like, so true, we just get fruit and flowers, and then a bug comes and I scream. But I saw this TikTok of a girl, I think I mentioned in the podcast before, but she was like, sounds? Are you kidding? Music?
Yeah.
We get that? Like, talking about the experience here on Earth, you're like, colors? Sick. What?
Sick.
Colors.
Colors.
Shapes?
Everything. All of it.
Soft? When gratitude gets to that point.
Breath.
Breath. Oh.
When you see it all boiled down to just, like, the divinity in a single inhale, exhale, it's like,
Alex was on a date the other day, and he was like, you're the most positive person I've ever met in my whole life. Like, have you ever been hurt? Like, you must have never been hurt. Like, oh, it's not how it necessarily works. Okay, this can't be the final question, but I do need to ask this before the final question. Someone said, is math even real?
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
Pythagoras, come at me.
Math,
bro,
is so real.
I love him.
Math explains whatever the fuck that we're talking about. You can either feel it or you can solve it. It's all the same. Sacred geometry, the equations.
You like Fibonacci sequence?
I'm like,
you ever dabbled?
Math is real. I believe in math. I do think that math is something you can subscribe to or not subscribe to. I do think it's a belief system. This is a funny question. What do I do if I don't like my boyfriend's name? Serious question. Yeah.
Call him a pet name. If you don't like your boyfriend's name, come. I called Cherry Chair.
Yeah. You called him Cherry.
I called him Chair.
Edit. His name was Matthew.
Pick a new one. Use his last name. Use his middle name. Make a pet name.
You really have done this with all of
them. Every guy I've ever dated.
Every guy you've ever dated. Wow.
I'm just saying, pick a name. Pick a new one. And honestly, you know, they'll like it too. It's like special.
Where is your home? Where do you belong?
Me?
We're both going to answer this because I think we might have different
answers.
But like, where is your home and where do you belong?
My usual answer is I would just say, like, wherever my sisters are, like, wherever my family is. Because it's the most difficult perfunctory question to answer. Oh, my gosh.
I really feel like it's wherever I am. As long as I'm in a good space with myself.
Home, though, I think can be people and sentiments, particularly when you've moved around as much as we have. Like, I do think of those people where it's like, I grew up in this house and my parents still live there and I go and I visit every Christmas and Thanksgiving. And, like, I have a home base. I think that's rad for me just because I'm not military, but God, did we move around like it? I think there's very much a sense of, like, yeah, wherever you are. It's like wherever your heart is at that time, that's your home. Like, right now, California is your home.
Even when I'm traveling, sometimes I'll say, let's go back home, referring to the hotel we stayed in for two nights. I can make home quickly.
But I think on a serious consideration, your home base. I feel like the plains and, like...
No.
No?
No. Sure. But not any more than when I went back to New York in October.
Yeah. Same thing.
That felt like home to me. I've been able to build a home here in California as well. But I'm able to feel, as long as I'm comfy on my own, I feel at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if I'm not feeling comfy on my own, suddenly Los Angeles doesn't feel like a home anymore. If I'm uncomfortable in my skin, suddenly New York doesn't feel like home. It really just feels like within my meat suit, I need to feel comfortable and that's my home.
Yeah.
Truthfully, within my own personal experience.
So where the heart is?
Where the heart is. Where my heart is.
Yeah, where the heart is. Yeah. Huh.
And maybe it's different because I'm an only child.
Yeah.
But I fully believe that.
I think people can also feel like home is a big one.
Of course.
Like, no matter, I mean, we've learned that firsthand, but no matter where you are or what's going on, it is kind of cool, that consideration where it's like you could be in a different country and, like, the arms of someone can feel more like home than your childhood better, you know?
Or feeling, okay, as a caveat or an extension of this belief that I've answered with, if I'm feeling really upset and I give you a call, home.
Oh, don't make me cry.
Isabella wants to know, how will you ever feel ready to die?
When you're at peace with the fact that, I mean, it's kind of a tricky one to navigate.
Do you ever have a moment of such heightened gratitude, peace, excitement, whatever that is? Is I have had so many moments in my life where I'm running such a high that I think to myself, if I died right now, I'd be fine.
I feel that way every day, all the time. I wrote my own eulogy in that poem. Remember?
I have moments where if this is all it got to be, I did the best I could. And I think that's how you prep being ready to die, is at least knowing that you gave yourself every shot you could.
Yeah. Like, I would like to have kids. That's one thing I haven't done. I would like to have kids, but honestly, if I died, like, walking out of this podcast studio, like, yeah. I feel that way every day of my life.
Where I'm dying when I'm 80, thinking, yeah. Oh, I never had kids. That would maybe be a regret. But
yeah,
having an end now, no. Do we ever stop loving someone?
Totally.
Like, someone can be out of my life that I never am in contact with again, but the love doesn't stop.
Yeah. You see someone's soul.
Because the love was given, the love is there.
Yeah. You don't need to see their soul again. It's like it happened. It's like Tupac. It's like, you may not be at my table, but I still want you to eat.
Is beauty taught or inherently known?
Both. Guess that's that.
Do you have any questions for me?
Always.
All right. What you got, girl?
If there were one anecdote or point or, like, trope that you wish was more touched on or spoken about or considered, what would it be?
The ability to find excitement.
Ooh.
There is so much to be excited about. There's so much to be enthused about and a lot to be involved with. And eliminating any shame around diluting your excitement is a shame to yourself.
Mm.
Like, tired talking to our other friend on the phone saying, I don't understand how Lexi is shaking her ass while scrubbing.
I'm like,
she's wiping the countertop, having the time of her life, dancing to her music in her headphones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's all I had to do that day. Oh, it's a Sunday? Great. I just get to put some clothes that I love wearing, that I loved purchasing.
Again, though, that's
to wash.
It's neural pathways, though, that you've paved.
I think some of it was natural, though. And I think, as you're saying, if they are neural pathways that can be created, I would like more people to find excitement in their life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure, I'm not expecting everyone to be super thrilled about doing laundry, but I do think you should get to enjoy your day-to-day. And if you're not able to do that, you should change your day-to-day.
Yeah.
Next. What are, like, date questions that you ask when you want to get to know
someone?
Every
single time. It's last meal question, like death row meal. Oof. But
I've added something new onto mine.
But.
Okay.
There's two that I have always.
Okay.
Let's say your late grandmother had an apple pie and, like, she's, you know, whatever.
It can be there.
It can be there. A restaurant in Italy that's since closed down. It's, everything's on the, like, there's no rules, actually.
I can have my mom's coffee cake and totally.
All the things. Oof. And the recipe. I'm sorry.
Oh, me too. Me too.
But I love that one because, and also sometimes they need a little prompting, but, like, do they answer in courses? Do they, you know, like, I love how insightful it is into how their mind works, because you'll see, I've seen a range of answers. Like, sometimes, example, it's like, oh my gosh, there's this place in India. They can't get the spices in the US. They can only make it at this one restaurant. There's one woman who comes in once a week, XYZ. My dad's, you know, whatever recipe and this and oh, you know, and the thought that they put into it, and like, oh, and for dessert, like, are they limited? Are they this? And then you see sometimes, and, you know, someone's like, probably pizza. And it's just like the range of answers and the way, and also, like, where's their mind go, and how much thought and consideration is put into it, and what are their reasons for picking it out? I love that because I think it's so insightful.
One of my recent favorite questions that I was asked was, you're driving up the coast, you're going to be in the car with someone for 10 hours. There's 5 seats in the car. It's just like a basic sedan. Who's in the car with you?
Ooh.
And it can be anyone, dead or alive.
Oh.
Known, not known.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun one.
One more question to ask your date.
Oh, what's another question you ask your date?
If your house is on fire and you can save one thing, what is it? And I think it shows what's valuable to them.
Like, as long as the people are out, if there are any.
Your journal?
I don't care.
Damn. You can save one thing, though.
I can
grab one thing. You're allowed to grab it, Lexi. That is also insightful answer.
I'm like, I don't care. Everybody's safe. We're good. Yeah. It's all material.
Everybody is saved. Everybody's safe. I asked that because I've asked this question every date I've ever been on, and recently I got one of the funniest answers.
What it is
the date? He's like, kind of like scanning. He's like, is this a trick? And I'm like, no. And he's like, is there a wrong answer? And I'm like, I love the subtext going on because I also think this way. I'm like, there's no wrong answer. Like, just answer. And he's like, all right, house is on fire. I can grab one thing. I'm like, yes. He's like, a fucking fire extinguisher. And you win the game.
I'm over here like, we're out. Let it burn.
I'm be sitting there with my journals while watching the house burn down. Homie's got his pictures. I'm like, oh yeah, fire.
Thank you for sharing all of your words of wisdom.
Oh, I love you so much. This was so fun. I want more hard questions.
Yeah.
And I'll do more reading next time to be prepared.
Girl, there was no preparation. I didn't send you the questions beforehand. I skimmed them very quickly and then I gave them to you game time.
Fair.
I love you all so much for listening. If you made it this far, let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. Other than that, I will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening. XOXO, Lexi.
Love you.